Hello, thank you. So I'm going to talk about work that I started in my dissertation, and then it's a longer-term study that started as in continuing with the idea of could we use prairies as a bioenergy feedstock. And so part of the impetus for this research is that potentially bioenergy feedstock production could be something that is beneficial to the environment. Current land use changes due to biofuel production are taking perennial lands out of vegetation, so taking lands out of grasslands and moving them into corn. So this is a land use change figure showing the reduction of grassland in the western Corn Belt from 2006 to 2011. And you can see eastern South Dakota and North Dakota are having tremendous losses in grassland, and a major driver of that is increased corn prices due to the corn and soybean prices due to increased demand for corn grain ethanol. And so certainly ethanol can make land use changes that are not beneficial to the environment, but potentially prairies could be used as a bioenergy feedstock and something that could provide a market-valued product, but that also provides environmental benefit. And so it's well known that prairies provide a range of ecosystem services, and most of these listed up here don't really have economic value, aren't market valued. So prairies definitely help with soil formation and carbon storage underground. They're a great habitat for a range of animals, including insects as pollinators and natural enemies, as other animals like songbirds and wildlife. And then they can really help with water quality issues in terms of reducing nitrogen pollution, phosphorus pollution, reducing erosion. And then they can also help with the timing, the pulsing of water, in that the soil can often hold more water under prairie systems than under row crop agriculture. And so you end up with soil that can hold water and distribute it out more evenly. And so we get all these ecosystem services from prairies, but currently, as I said, these really aren't economically valued. And so could we use bioenergy as a way to add a market-valued product to prairies? And so what I'm going to talk about today is research where we looked at using prairies and how does the prairie function when we manage it for bioenergy, both agronomically and ecologically. And so the research questions that I'm going to address today are how does nitrogen fertilization affect the yield and yield stability of prairies managed for bioenergy? And so this kind of agronomic question, if we fertilize a prairie compared to not fertilizing a prairie, how does that affect its productivity? And then kind of an ecological question of how does this nitrogen fertilization affect diversity and plant community composition of these prairies that are managed for bioenergy? And so the experiment that we used to test this was one that we call the Comparison of Biofuel Systems Experiment. So this is an aerial photo of the COBS experiment from 2009. This experiment started in 2008. You can see that there are there's five different cropping systems that are being tested in this experiment. Today I'm only going to talk about two of the treatments, the two prairie treatments. The other treatments are annual cropping systems that I won't address today. And so of the prairie treatments within the COBS experiment, there is a prairie that's fertilized every year with nitrogen fertilization and an unfertilized prairie. And so as I mentioned, the experiment was started in 2008, so all of these treatments were seeded in May of 2008, and during the first year, we didn't manage them for bioenergy production. So we mowed all of the plots twice during the year for weed control. We didn't harvest biomass at the end of the year, and then the fertilized prairie wasn't fertilized that first year. But from 2009 ongoing, so we have data through 2015, then the fertilized prairie received spring nitrogen fertilization at 84 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare, and then both treatments are mowed, and then the biomass is removed after plant senescence in October. And so if we look at, so how do these prairie systems function in terms of their yield and yield stability, this is a figure of the harvested above ground biomass, so not total above ground biomass, but what we would harvest with a combine from 2009 through 2015. In biomass and megagrams per hectare. And the blue is the prairie treatments and the red are the fertilized prairie, and those error bars are standard error. And so one thing that you notice is that the yield is variable over time. So, you know, it's nice that we can have 7 years of data here. And certainly one thing that's likely affecting the yields would be the weather. And so this is a table of the annual precipitation at the site from 2009 through 2015. And then that second or the third column is the comparison between that year's annual precipitation and then the long-term average. So if a value is less than zero, it was a drier year. If a value is greater than, if it's less than one, it was a drier year. If it's greater than one, it was a wetter year. And so you can see that over the seven-year period, we've had a year of flooding. So 2011 had much higher than average annual precipitation, and it was really concentrated from June through September. And in 2012, it was a very dry year. It was the start of a drought where there was starting in May, much less precipitation and then going through the rest of the growing season. And so you can see the rest of the years, you know, are around the range of normal. Another thing in terms of the yield, this is that same figure, but you'll notice that the fertilized prairie always has more harvested above ground biomass than the unfertilized prairie. And on average, the fertilization increased the harvested biomass yield by about 63%. And then with the seven-year average being 5.2 megagrams per hectare of harvested biomass for the unfertilized prairie and 8.5 megagrams per hectare for the fertilized prairie. And then on that their very bottom row, the fertilized there was a ratio of the fertilized prairie yield to the prairie yield. And so you can see in every year the fertilized prairie made more biomass, but in some years, like in 2011, the fertilized prairie only made 20% more, whereas as we're getting to 2015, the fertilized prairie had more than double the above ground biomass of the unfertilized prairie. And so if we want to look at how stable are these yields over time, this is that same figure of yield, but where we calculate the coefficient of variation of the different treatments, so how variable are those yields over time. And what we find is that the fertilized prairie has more stable yield over this seven-year study period, and the yield has been more variable in our unfertilized prairie. So that's kind of this agronomic performance of these prairie systems. In terms of the ecology of the prairies, if we want to talk about diversity and plant community composition, this is a figure of Simpson's diversity from the prairie and fertilized prairie treatments from 2009 to 2015, but you'll notice we're missing diversity data from 2012 and 2013. And then, so you can see that by 2015, there's no difference in diversity between the fertilized and unfertilized prairie treatments. And there's been a couple years, so in 2011, that fertilized prairie had higher diversity, and in 2014, the unfertilized prairie had higher diversity, but now as we're looking at it over a longer period of time, where we're at now is that they have similar diversity. And of course, this is an overall measurement of the total diversity of these treatments. If we want to look at the more specific plant community composition, this is an ordination, so it's a non-metric multidimensional scaling ordination, where the biplot are those lines in the middle, and so the biplot lines are only added if a species had an importance on the plant community composition of an R squared of at least 0.25. And again, in this ordination, the diversity data from 2012 and 2013, we don't have that. The treatments in orange are the fertilized prairie treatments, and the treatments in blue are the unfertilized prairie treatments. And the colors, the darker the color, the earlier in the study period, and as the colors get lighter, we're getting to 2015. And then the same with the blue. So the darker the hues, the earlier the study period, and the lighter hues are later. And so one of the things that we noticed from this, so if you would look at the bottom right, in 2009, the fertilized prairie was really dominated by Canada wild rye and Indian grass and switchgrass. And then by, you know, years 2 and 3, it was dominated, or it had an awful lot of summer and fall forbs. And then now it's really dominated by big blue stem, so far this to the left on the figure. And so it's been really variable and very dynamic in terms of its plant community composition over time, whereas the unfertilized prairie has been much less dynamic. I mean, each over the time period that's changed, but it has gone, you know, from having, you know, mostly being dominated by switchgrass and Indian grass to now being dominated by big blue stem, but in a much less dramatic switch in terms of the plant community composition. And so overall, from this what we get, so that fertilizing the prairie definitely has increased the yield. It has also increased the stability of the yield over the 7 years that we have been collecting the data on the prairie. By 2015, we didn't see differences in the diversity of the prairie, but we definitely saw that the path or the trajectory of the plant community composition in the fertilized prairie has been more dynamic over the study period than the unfertilized prairie. But currently now the prairies are both dominated by having big blue stems, so they've come back to being more similar. And with that, I think I've allowed time for questions. Thank you. Yes. That's a good point. Okay, so this site had been managed for corn seed production before, so it was just an amazing, like if soil could be sterile, this soil was. And so we have very, very low weed pressure. Non-seeded biomass definitely is always lower than 5% of the total biomass. So we've had very, very low weed pressure, but it's because it was on former cropland that had been very heavily sprayed for a long time. So it's different than other places where you might restore a prairie. Yes.
When it was originally seeded, where did the seed mixes come from, and who chose the composition of those seed mixes?
Good. So most of the seed, I think all of it came from Prairie Moon Nursery in Winona, Minnesota. So Matt Liebman, the co-author, and I kind of worked to design the seed mix, and we were looking for big-ish prairie plants. I mean, we tried to represent a range of functional groups, a range of species diversity, but one of the things was that we didn't pick a lot of really short plants or small plants. I mean, all of them tend to be kind of larger plants. Yeah, yes, so we did know that it was a biomass experiment. We did target plants that we thought would. Yes. Yes, and also, yes, so we made, Prairie Moon Nursery got seed sourced from within 100 miles of Ames, but it really is a challenge because Ames is on the Des Moines lobe, so a glaciated area, and there really is almost no seed that actually came from the glaciated area, and so a lot of it has come from sites that are less desirable for farming. So, right, the seed was from the area, but it is not necessarily from right around the area. Yes?
So you said that in 2015 there is not any more difference in diversity, but we see a general diversity decline.
Yes.
So that's not a positive effect, let's say, when we want to look at
Yes, absolutely. And so this is a figure where I break down the diversity by functional group. And so that red are the warm season grasses. So really what we're seeing over time is that they're becoming increasingly dominated by warm season grasses. Yes, so in terms of ecosystem services, probably if the disturbance wasn't always in the dormant season, that would probably help with our diversity more. And we have another experiment to kind of test this, but you know, where we're currently at, they're always getting harvested in October, and the warm season grasses are really doing well in both treatments. So for a while, the fertilized prairie actually had that higher diversity because the forbs were staying in the system, but now the forbs definitely are still there, but there's really a lot of big blue stem. And something that doesn't come out in the ordination, but you definitely see it when you're there, in the prairie, there are definitely legumes. So the system is definitely getting nitrogen limited as we keep hauling off the biomass, and so the legumes are able to persist, although at less than 5% of the total plant cover. But in the fertilized prairie, you certainly have no legumes. But you do have some other forbs making up the diversity. So yeah, in terms of ecosystem services, the management that we're using for bioenergy doesn't seem to be maximizing diversity. Any other? Yes.
Based on your experience here, do you have any thoughts about the impact of nitrogen deposition on prairie communities? Is this something to be concerned about, or not to be concerned about?
Oh, right. Okay, so nitrogen deposition right on prairies in general. So I am not an expert on this, but like background nitrogen deposition rates are probably more than prairies would have historically had. So even in our unfertilized prairie systems, they're probably getting more nitrogen than historically prairies would have had, even from atmospheric nitrogen deposition. And that we were planting this on former agricultural ground that had a lot of nutrients in the soil. It had been managed with very high nutrients. And so these certainly aren't representative of like prairies of natural or like of remnant prairies or anything, or even what you would probably do for a restored prairie because the site was so nutrient rich. And on the unfertilized prairie, we're not adding more nutrients, but I was thinking just atmospheric nitrogen deposition, certainly, you know, everywhere would have that. Is that kind of what you're getting at? But I do think there's something to note here that these are not like kind of remnant or restored prairies. Hopefully they could provide some of the ecosystem services, but right, their diversity is much lower. Do you have a question?
What's your gut feeling about the future and sustainability of using prairie plants?
Oh, good question. I think it's a bad idea. I mean, it's so light and fluffy. I mean, you know, there really is, unless you could densify it in the field, like turn it into a bio oil and the farmers could use it locally, transporting around really fluffy biomass is really a challenge. And then if you would pelletize it or something, you'd use a tremendous amount of energy to pelletize it. And so my personal thought is that, you know, if maybe on farm they could burn it for heat, or if there'd be kind of a very local use for this fluffy biomass, I think, or really not dense biomass, I think that might be better than trying to propose that you would truck it far distances. And so really my personal interest is, I think that we're losing all this prairie. Is there some way farmers could get some money for it? But yeah, I wouldn't bet my farm, if I had one, that, you know, that you prairies will be a major contributor to bioenergy. And on that positive note, thank you all.